Welcome back, Crusaders, to the Nerd Crusade Podcast. I'm your host, Ian. And with me, as always, is...
Courtney.
Yes.
Hello.
This is episode 63. This week, we're going to be talking about a couple TV shows, because that's about all we've been able to watch, and there's nothing really new in gaming.
Well, there's always next week.
Yeah, next week we'll have definitely Fallout, the TV show.
Yeah.
Premieres. So
and we'll Shogun.
And Shogun's finale, whatever, I think. Possibly, or is it two episodes?
I think there's two more.
Okay. Yeah. So, speaking of Shogun, that's what we're first going to talk about.
Yes.
So, this past week's episode was really good.
Called A Stick of Time.
Yeah, Stick of Time is what it was called. I really enjoyed it. As far as, like, we're starting to get to some conclusions, and there was, like...
Conclusions?
Well, get to some conclusions on, like, what's the battle plan's going to be, because, like, it kind of blows up in everybody's face by the end of this episode.
Yeah.
So, as we had said before, we had talked about, like, this Crimson Sky attack that Toranaga was into, which was just throwing people at Osaka Castle. They're just going to throw their army at Osaka, and this Crimson Sky was going to be just, like, bodies being thrown at Osaka until they overflow it. And he was hoping to get the help of his brother.
His half-brother.
Half-brother, who the actor they picked for that, man, the guy looks like a younger version of the Toriyaga actor. So he picked the perfect guy for him.
And he's charming and witty, and you're like, ooh, I like him. Until he dropped the ball during their big celebratory dinner.
Yeah, he has a big hat, too.
Yes.
Very big hat.
Well, that's how you know someone is bad, when they have a big old hat.
Yes. He's literally like the Pope of Samurai here. Because he shows up and everybody's like, well, they haven't talked for a long time. It might be kind of weird. He might help us. He might not. And then, like, he embraces Toranaga, like, oh, yeah, we're great. And, like, they banter back and forth. And he brought his whole army with him to join Toriyaga's.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, at the dinner, when he's like, hey, we're going to celebrate tonight, you'll have like your courtesans as much as you want, and we'll just celebrate and we'll talk about the plan tomorrow. But at dinner, he's like, no, let's talk about the plan now.
And he goes, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah. Was one of the kind of, I guess, filler parts of it is, but before he gets to that point, he's telling stories about Toranaga. And he tells a story that's kind of made Toranaga a legend, which is he won his first battle when he was 12 years old.
Yep.
As a warlord. So he became a warlord at 12. And the guy who surrendered
and
to him...
And he's known... And because of that, he's known to be, like, the great strategist.
Yeah. So, like, and they do show us this, where, like, he's a 12-year-old. He's just won a battle. The guy is going to surrender to him. But the guy asks for him to be his second when he commits seppuku.
Mm-hmm.
Which, what that is, if you don't know, is that seppuku is, yeah, they fall on their sword, but the second person is supposed to cut off their head
person isn't suffering.
Yeah, and it's up to debate, because some people have told me, like, you're supposed to cut the head, but not cut it completely off, which is very skillful to do, but, like, I don't...
Well, from here, it sounds like you're supposed to cut it off. All
and like I said,
in one swing.
What I've said, I've heard it differently, and I think it's more you cut the head off, like it's shown here, versus...
It might be different time periods,
yeah, versus too. You're not supposed to cut it completely off or some shit. But what it was... Interesting here is that, like, they show the scene where, like, he's supposed to be second, he swings down, then they cut back to modern day, and then the brother tells the tale at dinner, and how he cut off the guy's head.
In one blow,
and later on, Toranaga's, like, talking to his...
Well, at the end of the episode.
Yeah, he's talking to one of his older, like, comrades, the guy who was there, and says, like, how come you didn't correct him during the story? He's like, oh, I didn't think I should. And it's like, yeah, it took me 9 strokes to hit.
Yeah, which is like, oh, that's so gruesome.
And then he's like, yeah, what type of idiot picks a child to be his second?
And they both laugh about it. Like, yeah.
But that's a nice, like, insight of, like,
Toranaga
and, like, the Japanese lifestyle in that time period, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Basically, what happens is that the dinner, it's revealed that, oh, no, his half-brother is now the new regent, the one that replaces the guy that got killed last episode. He said, screw you to the actor, and like,
yes.
and try to escape. They replaced his seat with Toranaga's half-brother, who is there to accept his surrender and take him back to Osaka.
Yep.
Otherwise, I guess they're going to... They basically entrap the army there at that time, too. So, like,
yes.
There's nowhere they can go. They basically have to surrender. And Toranaga said he'll give his answer the next day.
Yep. And Blackthorn is like, well, we got to do something, like, get me on my ship and we can blast them.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, no, no. Trust in Toradaga.
Yeah, and then, like, another ship shows up anyway, so he couldn't even sneak onto the ship if he wanted to.
Yeah.
Kind of other filler stuff happens where, like, Mariko's husband wants to kill Blackthorn. He asks for permission to do so. Not because he knows that something happened between them, but because...
There's that gut feel. It's like...
He's like, the way she looks at him upsets me. So, like, he doesn't... He wants to kill Blackthorn.
He's like, something's there. I have no proof that, they've done anything, but...
But just the way that she's warmer to him than she is to me.
Yeah.
Toradaga tells him basically shut up and deal with it.
Yes, and it's wonderful.
There is an interesting sequence that also kind of brings up possibly the origin of the geisha.
Yes, this was lovely.
The madam of the Coruscants wanted time.
Of the Willowwood.
Willowwood wanted some time with Toradaga, a stick of time, which I was interested in. They kept saying stick of time, and it turns out the stick of time was like a time it takes one piece of incense stick to burn.
Yep.
Which that was a cool way of them like asking for time with people. And basically her plan is like, hey, give me a section of Edo so I can take my girls there and other working girls and we'll make it a safer, better place and make them actually be more than just Coruscants.
Yeah.
Which basically it was alluding to, this is what geishas are going to be, like the entertainers and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. And if you do this, you know, you could get a cut of it because it'll be in the city and it'll be part of the government kind of run.
Yeah.
Stuff. Which I'm like, this girl is so thinking ahead, and the women in the show are amazing.
Yeah, and she also points out, though, is like, so, because he says, like, well, I might not live that long to, like, even be able to give you this. She's like, well,
it seems
odd that the great Toradaga wouldn't notice an army coming, our army surrounding him. It wouldn't notice all the stuff that his brother
or this would been. Happen.
And, like, it would, and this suddenly would, like, catch him off guard. This doesn't make sense. And then he kind of, like, silences her, like, your time is up. Mm-hmm. And then she leaves. And then he does put down his new will to give her that plot of land in Edo to do what she wants to do with.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that, like, she kind of calls him out, like, you're a strategist. Like, it's impossible for you not to have noticed that this was going to happen.
Yeah, or something like this would happen.
Yeah, or not be prepared for it. But to everyone else, we're like, what's going on? Everybody's waiting for Toradaga to come up with his decision. He's going to surrender.
Yeah, because he goes up the mountain and stares at a little shrine for a while. And they're like, what is he doing? Is he playing something? And he just comes back down, ignores everyone.
Yep. And then...
It's quite wonderful.
There's a sequence where, like, they're all gathered around. Blackthorn's there as well. And they're all sitting there waiting for Toradaga to give his answer. And
at the very end.
At the very end. That's not the very, very end, but it's toward the end where he basically, Toradaga gives his answer and says, yep, I surrender and I'll go with you to Osaka. And Blackthorn literally gets up kind of out of place and says, you guys are all basically weak. What the fuck are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And then storms out. Which our friend kind of brought up, like, is that part of the plan? Like, did he have a secret meeting with Toradaga that he was supposed to, like, step out? Because it was kind of weird that he got up to leave and nobody did anything.
He also called out two people in that half circle that they were all meeting with.
Yeah. So, like,
so I don't know if that was, like, a signal, like, you go do this, you go do that, or...
Yeah, it would be kind of interesting if there was, like, some secret conversation that we hadn't seen, because... And it also would work because... Unlike the original series, where everything was through Blackthorn's eyes.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And you're basically with him with just Blackthorn. This is just like, we're seeing the events unfold. And there's not a particular protagonist that we're watching.
Yeah.
So it's very possible that he could have had some secret meeting with him. Because even when Blackthorn asked for, hey, what do you want me to do? He said, I don't have any information for you. And
yeah.
I told him to leave. So him getting up at this meeting and calling people out and then storming off without anybody getting up to, like, tell the foreigner to sit down and shut up.
Yeah.
It was kind of weird, that happened. But then later that night, Toradaga's son decides he's going to step up and fight and tries to assassinate his uncle.
But the uncle was kind of antagonizing him throughout this entire episode as well.
Yeah, and even when he came in time, it's like, oh, you're finally ready to become a man.
Yeah.
But, like, he gets his uncle on the ropes somehow because he's, like, scurrying away from him.
Well, because the uncle's in this huge, long robe that is so... That is easily you can encumber your legs in. So he's trying to run away. And the son has like a small group with him, so they're attacking his men that are in the Willow Wood.
Yeah. I think he cuts his leg or something, right? Because he
kind of leaps away. He gets him a little bit with the sword, and it's of course raining, and it's at night, and so he chases him. And he chases him, and he slips on a rock.
Yeah, and, like,
and
this,
he cracks his head open.
Yeah, and this is like just dies. Outside the guy's room. Like he basically like kind of walks through a koi pond.
Yeah, it's kind of where the previous episode where Blackthorn, was, and how I forget her name, but the courtesan walks along like the stone path.
Yeah,
it's. I want to say it's either that exact path,
which
or
would make sense because similar. He was staying with that same courtesan.
Yeah.
Anyway. And so, like, the kid goes in there, he like you said, he's chasing him down, he's limping away, and then he slips on a rock in the pond.
He eats
and
shit.
And literally falls back and cracks the back of his head open on a rock. And it's kind of like a stroke of luck, because otherwise he would have killed the uncle.
Yeah.
But the uncle's like, yeah, see, there's no glory in this type of death, is there? Because, like... Whole time the kid's like wanting to be a warrior, wanting to go to war so much.
People wanting to prove himself.
And people are making comments. Even Toranaga said, like, why is it people who've never been to war are always the first to want to go to war? Not quite understand. Like, the kid wants to prove himself because his dad's the great warlord, child warlord, right?
Yeah.
To the point where the uncle tells him, like, there's no glory in death. Like, you should rather live. And then having him die that way, his last thing he hears from him is like, yeah, this isn't very beautiful, is it?
Yeah.
You're saying you're choking on your own blood as you cracked your skull open.
And you're just slowly dying out.
Now you're dead.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting in the next episode to see the fallout from that.
Yeah, definitely. See if there's some secret plan going on. Because, yeah Toranaga should have known, would have planned for something like this to happen.
Yeah.
But maybe the plan is to be walked into Osaka and then to cut the dragon off at its head.
Yeah,
killing Ishida wouldn't do it because it's the heir's mother he would have to really take out.
Yeah,
and that
so he
would
needs
be...
to get close to the key players. And
but
that's
whether or not,
in there.
Whether or not he really knows it's the heir's mother who's really behind it, we don't know. Because even that would upset the heir. Like, his whole thing is protect the heir.
Oh, yeah.
And like,
so, like, his first priority is probably, like, secure the heir, make sure the heir is safe, and then... go full berserk and just kill the rest.
Yeah, although I don't see Toranaga going out and killing people. Like
no. It would be like Mariko's husband and the one
or
guy.
Or Mariko herself.
Or Mariko herself, which would be great to have her go and kill her ex-best friend. Or yeah. We could have a surprise Fuji attack. And Fuji kills her. Because we saw Fuji practicing.
Yeah, Fuji kills Ishida because Ishida ordered the death of her husband and son.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Because we saw her practicing, and they're like, oh, you shouldn't practice, you're still injured.
Yeah, because she's saying, yeah, I everybody needs to fight. Even the women who are able should fight.
Yeah. So I'm hoping Fuji lives through this whole series because she is my favorite.
Yes.
And I hold her dear to my heart.
I'm interested to see where Blackthorn plays a role in this. And, like, I love people say, like, hey, this is a great new adaptation of the story because they feel like the 70s one was very much a white savior story, which it really wasn't. But that's how a lot of people took it. A white guy shows up and he solves all everybody's problems.
It's also written by a white guy. Well, a British man that was captured in World War II. And this series is where he kind of gets his idea to do these basically captured... foreigners in the East.
Yeah, and the thing is that I feel like the 70s one was more about him assimilating to the culture. I don't remember all this political intrigue stuff happening.
Right, same.
Where, like, here, this is, whole story has all been about
because
power struggle in Japan happening now.
Well, because in the original, you saw Blackthorn learn Japanese really quick.
Learn their ways.
Yeah.
Accept their ways. Happy
He's
to
just
happy to soak in their culture. We're here. Blackthorn's like, I just want to leave.
He's still struggling.
Let me leave. Where's my men?
And he just knows a few sentences to, help him get by from day to day.
Yeah, and his main concern is like, I just want to leave. Like, if you guys aren't going to use me to fight and we're not going to fight our enemies together, then fuck it. I want to leave.
Yeah.
And because he's not being filled in on the plan, which why would he? He's a foreigner. Mm-hmm. He's being used as a pawn, so they're not going to tell him everything. It makes sense that that would be where he would want to be. Like, hey, I want to leave. Where like in the original one, it wasn't that at all. And then I saw an article earlier this week where like somebody was answering the article's question of somebody saying, "Where are all the black people?" It's like, okay, there was a black samurai, the Yoshi guy. Who came from, I believe, France and stayed there and became a samurai. But like, the article is kind of pointing towards the native people of Hokkaido, who were a little bit of a darker skinned Japanese people, but they by no means were fucking black.
No, they're like,
they were just darker, darker.
They're just a little like tan.
Yeah, they were darker Japanese people, but they were by no means. You could not sit there and say they had African descent, even if they did. They were very much, these are Japanese people, but they're just darker than the other Japanese people. So like the person who wrote the article was just like trying to like
stir the pot,
and like was completely uninformed about the actual history of Japan. Just saw that, oh well, they have this black tribe. It's like they weren't African Americans, dipshit.
Yeah, they weren't black. They were just
Japan,
slightly darker.
Yeah, Japan was very an isolated country back then, even as it is today.
They still would invade China and Korea.
Yeah, but like they still also were very like, foreigners, get the fuck out.
Oh yeah.
Don't stay here. Don't integrate with foreigners.
Yeah, and you see that when they interact with the Portuguese, even though it's like beneficial trade for both of them, they're like, get out of here.
I mean, there are the story of the Black Samurai and Blackthorn and all that, where there are people who assimilate to their culture, which is fine. But throughout generations,
that's not what this is.
Throughout generations, it's always been like Japanese people, they tend not to marry foreigners. They tend not to do any of that stuff. Them and like the whole Eastern area, like China, Korea, and all that, have been like extremely racist to other groups and mingling to that point. Like even now, they have a population problem. Everybody's like, the answer is foreigners. They want to hook up with Japanese people. Let them hook up
or move there and raise their families there.
Because even after COVID, they're like, oh, we're going to cut off foreigners. We won't let them back in. They're like, hey, idiots, we don't have a tourist income anymore.
It's just tourism. It's also the workforce.
Yeah.
Going to run in pretty damn quick a smaller and smaller workforce, because a lot less people are getting married and having children too.
Yeah, and then
the natural-born citizens.
Kyoto was going bankrupt because no tourism was showing up.
Yes, and they're like,
when they finally had to say, "Fine, we'll open up the borders again, and let more foreigners come in and just do what they did before COVID, where you could just go in and you could just like tour the country yourself." But like during COVID and like a little bit after, there was like, no, you have to be booked with a
tour
company.
Guide, yeah.
You have to be booked for certain things. Like it took away a lot of your freedom of like just exploring the country on your own.
Yeah. And you also had to stay isolated in a hotel for a certain amount of time before you could join the.
It was like 2 weeks.
Yes. Even with or without COVID.
Without COVID. Like you had to be isolated when you got there so like it added too much time to somebody's trip.
Yeah,
that would make it feasible for a lot of foreigners to show up.
Yeah, which a lot of Western countries are like, okay, I only have 2 weeks. Or I should say a lot of North American tourists are like, I only have 2 weeks or only have 10 days. I can't spend that in a hotel.
Yeah, I can't spend half of that or even more or most of that in a hotel waiting for them to clear me so I can go on a guided tour to a certain place when maybe, hey, I want to go to a more traditional area or I want to drive to Hokkaido. I want to go experience something else.
Yeah, or these other small towns.
Yeah, where like, if you wanted to do touristy stuff, yeah, you could have done that. And I'm sure there's people who did, but that appeal of Japan for a lot of people is to go and explore like the different prefectures they have, the different specialties they have for each prefecture. Like the prefectures are like states here in the US, but like they're to the extreme to where like each state has like kind of their own thing, but like they really are like, Hokkaido is known for this is known for this, and like you
this
go there and
known
you do
for
that
apples. This one's known like for their certain food
or for the ramens for like, hey, this has the grave of Jesus Christ.
I want to go and I want to laugh. I like weird shit.
And those prefectures like really celebrate that to make sure everybody knows, like, yeah, we're known for this. Yeah.
Each town has their own mascot.
Yeah.
So you got to collect them all.
Yeah. So it's very much encouraged if you're going to go to Japan, like, yeah, you can go do tourist stuff in Tokyo and Kyoto and whatnot, but if you're going to go, you'll get even more if you can get a little bit outside and go to different prefectures and stuff with maybe even a guide.
Yeah.
But the tours that they were offering are very much like, here's Tokyo, here's Kyoto.
And it's very curated. Here's Osaka, maybe. And very limited on what you could do and where you can eat. So it's just not the best time to go. Yeah. But then when they finally like, okay, Reberland, you can come in. They're just flooded.
Yeah, that right was like literally, and it's like they found like Kyoto itself was like, we will have no money because we have no tourists here.
Help.
We need to reopen the borders. And that's exactly what they did.
Flood.
They got so jam packed that now they're shutting down the Geisha Street district so foreigners can't go there unless they have something set up.
Well, that's mostly because the tourists there were being assholes and harassing the Geisha and the Mako. Girls by like pulling their hair
and touching them.
It's like, no, that all that takes time. It's all expensive. And also it's fucking rude.
Yeah. A lot of rude
folks.
Which unfortunately, like, doesn't matter where you're from. Every country has them and they'll be stupid people to do that type of stuff.
Yep. But so it's always those few that ruins it for everyone.
Yeah. But anyway, Shogun's a great show. You should watch it. Yeah. Check it out. If you're ever interested in traveling to Japan, I'd say there's lots of YouTubers out there to watch. Chris Abroad is one of them who has had the last decade of YouTube videos about what it's like to live in Japan, where to go to Japan, things to know about going to Japan.
Yep, and tons of different areas outside of the major tourist spots.
Yeah. So now moving on to our next TV show, which is based on a movie, but like loosely.
Very loosely.
It takes a premise of Guy Ritchie's last movie, which was The Gentleman.
With Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, with Matthew McConaughey, Charlie Hunnam, Colin Farrell, Jeremy Strong.
Colin Farrell was amazing in
really,
that.
Really good movie. Like, and it's like, because...
Oh, yeah, Hugh Grant. I forgot Hugh Grant was in it.
Like,
that was a great movie.
Guy Ritchie is really, really good at...
One thing.
Honestly, it is. Because, like, when he does other stuff, it's just not... It doesn't hit as hard. Mm-hmm. But, like, British gangster and gangster culture is, like, he nailed it perfectly to... I don't know if it's authentic or not, but it's fucking interesting to watch.
It's great. And everybody loves it. The dialogue is wonderful.
Yeah. Like, as Scorsese is the Godfather, that's what Guy Ritchie is to, like, the British gangster, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is
kind of... modern British gangster. Yeah.
Because, like... The funny thing is, and it's showcased in the movie Gentleman, is that like whenever you see like gangs of Britain, which are like the kids trying to act all hard and everything, as an American, it just seems really pathetic.
Yeah.
I get like some of those gangs can be violent and they go stab people and do a bunch of horrible shit, but they're trying to imitate American gangsters. Mm-hmm. And it's as an American, it's like, you didn't grow up in Compton. What the fuck are you talking about?
Well, like, I guess... so it's not just growing up in Compton. It's also a lot of the gangs in America have guns. So you're like, well, shit. Do they have a gun or don't they have a gun?
And that's
like, well, I'm going to guess 90% of the time they're going to have a gun and shoot me.
Yeah, and in Britain they don't have guns, but they have machetes, they have knives, and they'll fuck people up with that shit. But I mean, when it comes down to it.
Range versus up close.
Well, yeah, and what they kind of showcase in The Gentleman is like real game, like the real mobsters and gangsters of like the real criminal world. Mm-hmm. They have guns.
Yeah,
the kids running around with a machete trying to threaten somebody is like, yeah, that's fine. You don't have a gun on you, and like carrying a gun can be risky. But if they need to, the real guys have a gun and they'll tell you to fuck off.
Yeah.
Because there's a scene in Gentleman where he basically does that. And he's like, says, "Fuck it, I'm tired of dealing with these shitty kids." And like shoots his like little machine gun in the air and says, "Shut the fuck up and give me what I want." And like they all run away. So it's like, but the premise of the movie that they take for the show is the concept of there being a weed farm that's using the lands of the aristocrats.
Yeah.
And they're growing weed underground in these areas to hide the production, and they own like a big percentage of like the weed production in the country. Now, the movie, all their characters and all that, they don't appear in the TV show that was on Netflix called The Gentleman, but this takes that premise of a lord who was involved with the group who are in this version of the show. It's owned by a drug dealer known by Bobby Glass, who is in prison, but his daughter's basically been running the whole operation.
Yep.
So this lord dies, and his son who's in the military, basically comes back to deal with his father's funeral and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And hear the will reading. He's the second born son, to strangely find out that he was left everything, not his older brother, but kind of makes sense because his older brother's a complete fuck up.
Which we see that very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, the guy, and of course, as you see in the first episode, like, the guy goes deranged that he was passed over. But he also had like $8 million in debt that he had to pay.
8 million pounds.
Pounds, yeah. Which our protagonist, who was played by Theo James, who plays Eddie, who mm-hmm. becomes the new Duke, basically bails out
his older brother, Freddie.
By working with Susie Glass, who's the daughter of the gangster who's running this whole weed business, because basically they approach him like, hey, we have the arrangement with your father. We want to keep everything the same. And like kind of throughout the entire series, Eddie's like, I want these people off my land. I want to remove the criminal element so my family will be safe and not get prosecuted or anything if something goes awry.
Yeah.
But to, as it happens in almost all Guy Ritchie's films, like people who get involved with the gangsters,
you stay involved,
end up gangsters. Having to do gangster shit to try and get out of it. Yeah. From like two stocks and two smoking barrels.
Lock, stock, and two smoking barrels.
That's what it is. The first, I think it's his first movie.
Mm-hmm.
From those guys getting in debt with gamblers to like having to rob a pot place to like, oh, we have guns that we could sell to pay off our debt. To Snatch, a boxing underground boxing promoter that ends up getting involved with jewel thieves and a bunch of other stuff. Like, these movies kind of have that theme of like somebody who's just trying to get one thing done and they keep having to get involved in more shit
mm-hmm.
to get out of it. And the only way out is usually through. But basically, the whole series is Eddie and Susie like dealing with these different situations.
And different people
within the underground.
Criminal underground.
Criminal underworld of yeah. From like the meth dealers, the cokeheads, the South American smugglers.
The underground fighters.
The underground fighting competition.
Gambling
to like the other aristocrats. Like what's really great is Giancarlo Esposito ends up playing American yeah. who wants to play at being an aristocrat, basically.
Yes.
And he does a great job.
He's wonderful.
He ultimately ends up being kind of like the main bad. Kind of like the main bad, but like in the end, like there is no real main bad because I almost feel like one thing that happens at the end where like basically, like I said, the whole season is him trying to get out of this. And basically him and Susie kind of working together, but then also betraying each other.
Mm-hmm.
But for like, he was fine helping them out while trying to make this agreement until he found out that Susie lied to him and killed somebody that he thought they had let go, which she did as like an insurance policy to make sure like the kid didn't cause any trouble later on.
Which fair.
Which makes sense because him not being a criminal didn't realize like eventually this kid's going to make a mistake and shit's gonna find people are gonna find him, and then they're gonna trace it back to him, and they'll also deal with the fact that his brother killed another gangster's brother out of fucking stupidity and rage.
Oh god, Freddie needed to get his ass beat. Yeah,
but the interesting thing is like Eddie tells his whole family the truth. Like everybody in the family knows what's going on. Even the sister who comes back at the very end from college,
mm-hmm. pregnant,
who's pregnant. He ends up explaining like everything to her what's been going on, to the point where it's like, cool, the whole family is in on it and it's helping him with whatever his plans are.
Mm-hmm.
But every time, like, Susie or him leave them out of it, something happens that gets fucked up. Like, they both make decisions that fuck the other person over.
Yeah.
To the point where, at the very end, when they end up talking to her father, like, one last time, and they basically kind of screw over his plan because his ultimate plan was like, fuck, I'm going to sell the business and get completely out of this
mm-hmm.
and sell out from underneath Susie to like whoever's the highest bidder.
Yeah.
So everybody bids on it and they go to the different people to like give them their prospects and tell them how they have to bid. And then Susie and Eddie also.
Which is with Courier Pigeon, right?
Yeah, because like her dad's obsessed with pigeons. So like Susie and Eddie end up making a bid, but even though their bid wasn't the highest, they got rid of the other bidders to basically make it so that they're the only bidder.
Yeah.
And not only, it's not like they went out and killed one of the bidders. They like got rid of them in interesting ways where like, oh, this guy who has the most money, he has tax fraud issues. Let's get him
for tax fraud.
Let's get his assets frozen and get him arrested for tax fraud. Oh, this person, I think like they got one, they got some people like confused, thinking someone else screwed them over. So like they went, so like they're going off to go kill each other basically. Yeah. And then the only person they kill is one person that fucked them over personally.
Fair.
But like the only thing I think was kind of a cop out, cause like what's really interesting about the gangster life there is that, and even with the aristocrat life, without it's portrayed by Guy Ritchie, is that everybody's confident every time they talk to somebody else. Mm-hmm. Only the people who are weak or slimy or like can't be trusted, like whine and weasel about stuff and like kind of like falter on what they're doing. Even when something doesn't go Eddie's way, he's always confident about what he's saying and what he's doing at that time to somebody.
Yeah.
Even that means he has to recorrect like immediately. But he's never lets anybody know. That's how every character acts. But I think Bobby Glass at the very end is like, oh, so you got rid of all the bidders and you're the only ones left. I did this on purpose to make sure you guys work together. I was like, bullshit, dude, you got. Like,
yeah, you thought, you can't admit it.
Like, you thought you were going to keep this Duke in your pocket. You were never going to let him go.
Yeah.
He found out a way to completely fuck you over unless you helped him. He ends up helping you out instead of fucking you over.
Yeah.
And then, like, he makes sure that, no, you're not going to screw your daughter over. I'm going to own your business, and I'm going to run it my way, and I'm going to protect all the lords who are involved and make sure nobody gets screwed over, and right. We're going to do it this way. And for him to like kind of say, oh, well, I wanted you guys to stop fucking with each other and like finally start working together, kind of like, come on, guy. Like, just admit you took the L there.
Yeah.
That's like the one part I was like, admit that you lost. Don't sit there and think that you had this plan from the beginning. Because mm-hmm. Clearly you didn't. But like, the show is really a lot of fun to watch as they go from scenario to scenario. Everything goes great. The first two episodes are directed by Guy Ritchie, and you can definitely feel it. The other episodes are kind of directed by a couple other people. You can see that they're trying to do Guy Ritchie's thing. But the characters, everything, lines, everything's written very, very, very well. So I definitely suggest check it out. It's on Netflix, called The Gentleman.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen the movie, go watch the movie, too. The movie is fucking fantastic. Again, none of these characters are involved in what happens in that movie.
So you don't need to watch the movie.
Yeah, you don't have to watch it. Like, so the only thing they take from it is the concept of there's these drug weed farms underneath mm-hmm. noble people's property. Very, very good. If you're a fan of Guy Ritchie, you'll see some people in there. Like, the groundskeeper is actually Tony the Tooth from Snatch, and also he's also played other gangsters in Guy Ritchie's films.
Yeah,
22 from Snatch, and he also played another one in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. Mm. He's also played Sphinx in Gone in 60 Seconds, if you're more familiar with his American stuff.
American work,
yeah, but he's mostly been in British films and whatnot.
Hey.
The costume work in here is great. Every outfit Susie Glass wears is fucking fantastic.
Beautiful.
All the suits that Eddie wears as the Duke is, like, great. I guess this is like, the modern Bridgerton, where it's, like, this is more...
modern Bridgerton. Because
Bridgerton's, like, fancy, like, old aristocrat stuff, and everybody likes the flowery language and the costumes and all that. And it's, like, this is the modern day, like, gives you a little bit of cry. So, like, this is Bridgerton for men.
Okay.
Like, watch this. This is
you have your women show and then you have your man show.
I feel like Bridgerton seems boring to me, but like I can see how like some people would look at this like, this isn't all ish, but like this is really good. I think it's
if great. You like Guy Ritchie, you'll like this show.
Definitely. But doesn't say all Guy Ritchie's films are hit. Like his King Arthur one was kind of hit and miss. Definitely has his style filter with it.
Mm-hmm.
The one he did with Jason Statham in the U.S., which is him trying to do a U.S.
weird.
Yeah, the banter he put in there doesn't make sense for Americans to say. Yeah. Like, Americans don't talk like that or banter with each other the same way British people do.
Yeah.
And he put that into that script where it's like,
No.
This would work if it was in the UK. Why'd you put this in LA?
Yeah.
I think that was called Wrath of Man, if I remember correctly.
Sure.
But Gentlemen, great show on Netflix. Go check that out. Highly recommend it.
Yep.
Only other thing I would say, I think that's pretty much our show for this week.
Shortest show.
Yep. Next week we'll be talking about Fallout, the TV show for sure, that comes out on the 11th.
Next Shogun, for sure.
Yeah, the next Shogun. Not a lot of games coming out and stuff, so...
It's kind of that slight lull.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing I've done so far is I didn't realize that Starfield had a huge update, like, 2 weeks ago.
Oh, how's that going?
Yeah, they made everything look really pretty.
Okay, but do you still get kicked off every hour?
Yeah, it's so cautious.
Oh, my God.
Like...
Why?
I was constantly telling, like... hitting them up on Twitter when they say, oh, we're gonna do this with graphical updates. It's like, when are you gonna stop the crashing? Like, fix the bugs. And
yeah,
who cares about making it look pretty? And
I don't care about pretty. I want it to run where I can sit there and play 2 hours straight and not have it crash or have a quest breaking bug.
Which that update, they did have a huge list of quest fixes.
Okay.
The only problem for us is on Xbox Series X and S, it still crashes constantly. Sometimes it crashes an hour after gameplay. Sometimes I've had it crash after like 20 minutes and then I had to reboot it. So that's the annoying thing about Starfield. It's still not 100% fixed. I don't know if they're going to get it there. But it definitely looks a lot better with the lighting changes that they made. Like,
okay,
it does impact, like, you look, it's like, this looks different. Why does this look different? And it looks even better.
It's lighting.
But they need to fix the crashing issue for sure.
Yeah.
But it seems like they went through and they fixed a lot of the quests that were broken or were being blocked, progression blocked and stuff.
Okay.
Other than that, still doesn't help. There's nothing really big coming out other than Indiana Jones later this year. There's Elden Ring DLC in June, but I'm probably not going to play that because I haven't even finished Elden Ring. So gaming stuff, we'll have to wait till like the presentations in end of May, June, if they're going to
see
do
what's
like
coming out,
what they do like in place of E3 with what they have coming out. I doubt there'll be hopefully there'll be a Fable announcement, but I seriously doubt that. Dragon Age is supposed to have something, but nobody thinks that's going to be a good game, and nobody thinks
that's ever going to come out.
And the next Mass Effect doesn't sound like it's going to be that great either. So I'll see what happens.
Again, those two, I don't think they're ever going to come out.
Yeah. So next week we will
watch talk more about shit.
Yeah, watch more stuff. We'll talk about that stuff and we'll definitely have more to talk about. But
yeah,
check out Shogun. Check out The Gentlemen. Great shows. If there's something you think we should watch, let us know. Maybe we'll check that out.
Yep.
All right. Have a great day. We'll see you next week.
Bye.